You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. In a new internet activity survey, which was released last Thursday, the 24th of April, results collected by the Australian Bureau of Statistics reveal Australians took up broadband and wireless internet connections in record numbers during 2007. In fact, at the end of the December quarter, there were 7.1 million subscribers to the internet in Australia, of which comprised 964,000 businesses and government subscribers and 6.14 million households. With Australia's population of around 21.2 million, that's not too shabby when it comes to household use, but business and government subscribers seem to be on the low side. This release contains results from all ISPs operating in Australia as of the 31st of December last year. For December quarter 2007, there were 421 operating ISPs contributing to the estimates. The number of non-dial-up subscribers recorded at the end of 2007 was 5.21 million, compared with dial-up subscribers of 1.89 million, an increase of 33% since September of 2006. Most of those were converts from dial-up rather than new internet users, but the total number of internet connections did increase over that period, 6.65 million to 7.1 million. The biggest change to our connectivity in 2007 was the arrival of wireless broadband. Over 481,000 people were connected to wireless broadband at the end of December 2007, compared with just 186,000 connected in September 2006. Once again, a substantial increase. Connections with download speeds of 1.5 megabits per second or greater increased to 2.5 million, or 35% of subscribers in 2007, compared to 1.13 million, or just 17% of subscribers at the end of the September quarter of 2006. For December 2007, a breakdown of higher download speeds has been released for the first time.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Ballmer says Microsoft could keep XP if customers really want it. Adam Turner takes a look at the brand new Australian Nokia Music Store. We continue Lydia Davis's report from the RSA convention in San Francisco. This week, portable hard drives with built-in data protection. Who would have thought? Microsoft admits Vista is a work in progress. New talent to beef up the Telstra board. And China says it's number one in internet population. Or is it? First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Australia says goodbye to Telstra CDMA. Tension between China and Tibet spills online. Apple tops $1 billion profit for the first quarter of 2008. Lord Mayors are hopeful of high-speed broadband, and researchers find a hole in flawless encryption technology. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra's CDMA telephone network will be switched off permanently on Tuesday, the 29th of April at midnight. In a last-minute scramble to migrate as many customers as it can to NextG, Telstra has been calling, texting and mailing its CDMA customers, and a national newspaper blitz was launched on Thursday last week. Telstra says that they've run a 2.5-year multifaceted communications campaign warning of the impending closure, and that the advertising blitz was one of the campaign's final components. Telstra's Wireless Executive Director, Mr. Mike Wright, told The Age Tech last week that at 12:01 a.m. on Tuesday this week, Telstra's Global Operations Centre would inhibit any new CDMA voice, text or data connection, starting with the eastern states, followed by others in accordance with local time zones. Telstra recommends that anyone still using a CDMA handset should visit telstra.com.au/CDMA upgrade for more information about the network closure. Tension between Chinese patriots and supporters of Tibetan independence has spilled online, with hackers targeting several websites in the United States. US broadcaster CNN was targeted by a denial-of-service attack last week, intended to interrupt its news website. CNN reported that the attack was repelled, resulting in countermeasures that caused the service to be slow or unavailable to some users in limited areas of Asia. CNN has been accused of skewing its news coverage of the crackdown in Tibet to cast China in a negative light in the lead-up to the Summer Olympic Games. A CNN commentator, Jack Cafferty, further inflamed the situation when, earlier this month, he labelled Chinese goods junk and its leaders a bunch of goons and thugs. A former US Army intelligence analyst, Scott Henderson, has been tracking hackers on his blog and says that what's happened over the last week may be the opening salvo in a new cyber war. Henderson says the hackers are working independently from the government, but with its tacit support, and that once they get started, quote, it's very hard to put the genie back in the bottle. In a denial-of-service attack, hackers flood a targeted website with thousands of automated requests for service in order to cause congestion. Apple reported on Thursday that profits in the first 3 months of the year topped $1 billion, as sales of Macintosh computers climbed more than 50%. Profits were also bolstered by sales of its flagship portable music player, the iPod. Apple's stock price struggled to hold ground, though, after the company trimmed its earnings prediction below Wall Street estimates for the current quarter. The tech giant said it earned $1.05 billion, or $1.16 per share, on revenues of $7.51 billion for the quarter, compared with only $770 million in the same quarter last year. Chief Financial Officer Peter Oppenheimer told Reuters last week that he expected gross margin in the June quarter to be similar to the March quarter's 32.9%, which was down from 35.1% last year. Apple Chief Executive Steve Jobs said he was delighted to report the revenue growth, and that with over $17 billion in revenue for the first half of their fiscal year, Apple had strong momentum to launch new products in the coming quarters. Apple shipped over 2.2 million Mac computers during the quarter, 51% more than it shipped during the same period in 2007. The company also sold 10.6 million iPods and 1.7 million iPhones during the quarter. The Australian Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, discussed the issue of high-speed broadband with Lord Mayors from around Australia in Canberra last week. Adelaide Lord Mayor Michael Harbison said a range of issues were discussed, including climate change and traffic congestion, and the broadband infrastructure was a key discussion point. Brisbane's Lord Mayor Campbell Newman said it was a productive meeting in which the federal government was lobbied to have a capital cities policy. Councillor Newman said councils will be able to make submissions on high-speed broadband to a new federal body, Infrastructure Australia, when it's established later this year. And a security flaw has been discovered in the supposedly foolproof quantum cryptography, according to Swedish researchers last week. Quantum cryptography, hoped by many to be the ultimate answer to internet data security, was found by researchers to have a problem when a system had been running for a long period of time. In simple terms, the technology uses a dual system carrying traditional internet traffic as well as a quantum channel carrying security information. The technology requires special hardware and was considered to be 100% airtight. Researchers believe the problem can be fixed by adding a so-called handshake between legitimate users. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Hi, I'm Rico Balver, Managing Director of Microsoft Research in Redmond in the U.S. Be sure to tune in to Tech Talk Radio soon when I'll be talking about the future of technology.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
$1.31 billion profit for the first quarter of this year. It's not too bad.
Yeah, the boys and girls at Mountain View are doing a sterling job.
I do get a bit scruffy sometimes, don't I?
I know, I think we all do in this technological world of ours.
At the end of the day, We don't want to be paying for data. We want to be paying for value-added services where they're relevant to us and useful to us.
Let's have a bit of a reminisce, shall we?
Oh, good.
I remember when I had my first GSM handset, the manual said it had SMS capabilities.
Please.
So it's obviously going to be a big red, orange, blue box in the corner and you go and plug your iPod and you dock it in, as you say.
Drop it in the dock.
What am I going to watch now? Oh, I'll connect to this server and watch this program.
You've still got to get in your car. You've got to drive down the road.
What do you want to do? Become a recluse or something?
E-ink? Dip your quill in.
Oh, well, that's the youth coming to.
Yeah, this loud pig noise squeals out.
Yeah, it is. It's very. It wakes the whole house at 2 in the morning. Oh, trust me.
Frightens the willies out of you.
Click your KMZ file and down you went.
Hey, you were in here a few weeks ago.
What's wrong with that?
Try the veal. Yeah, because...
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Showtime.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. It's lovely being in your ears, in your iPod, in your car radio, or wherever you might happen to be. Listening to that wonderful piece you just cut before then, Dr. Ron, what was the veal reference?
Try the veal. We're trying to work out what the reference was. I think it was, we're talking about location-based services, and I said, if you're walking outside a restaurant, your phone might beep, and it might go, hey, come
try
on in,
veal.
Look what's
what
special this week.
Yes, because I was talking to Rico Malvar, actually, about that. He was telling me all about those things. We're going to bring that to you on Tech Talk Radio very shortly.
It's going to be real. It's going to happen within our lifetimes.
It will.
Isn't that exciting?
It is. It is. So is this interview. Because, yes, I had a chat with him last week, actually. This is Rico, Managing Director, Microsoft Research. And we're just trying to slot him amongst all the guests that we've got coming up. So we're going to split him over two nights, the before and after. So it was a very interesting interview. But anyway, how's your week been, Dr. Ryan?
It's been great, thank you. How's the cold snap we've just had? Recently gone is summer and here is winter for us now.
Oh, yeah, it's
down
very,
here in Melbourne.
We're very digital, our climates these days, aren't
it
they?
It is very digital.
It goes from basking in the sun on the beach to putting on the skis and down the slopes.
Well, they had snow in parts of...
Exactly.
Parts of Victoria.
And you just wonder about Queensland, like all the sort of wall of weather that hit up there recently. What's the world coming to?
Mm.
I'd like to send a big cheerio to all of our listeners in Adelaide this evening too, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes. Did a bit of a spruik on ABC Radio today.
Oh, hello, Adelaide.
So, yeah, it's lovely part of the world over there.
Good to have you on board.
And not to mention all of our other listeners in Western Australia and Queensland up on Switch. We got some emails from some Switch listeners recently.
We have.
We've got Cairns FM.
Taswegians that are listening to us.
Absolutely. Now, you've got... Oh, before we go to your list, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Graham is in the studio this evening.
Very relaxed looking Graham. He's not at all.
He is.
Stressed.
No, absolutely. Just, quietly here waiting for the show to start. Yes.
Quietly.
Not rushing into the studio at the last minute in any way at all.
No, you had at least 5 minutes spare tonight.
That's right.
Anyway, it's been an interesting week in technology this week. It's been nothing really major has. Sort of surfaced in the world, but nonetheless, there's been lots of little things. We're going to be talking about some of those tonight. The big news is, this is it. Depending upon when you're listening to the show, CDMA is either dead and buried, or as we go to air this evening, it's got...
Less
than 3 hours to go before... I wonder if there's going to be a ceremonial switch. There'll be someone out there going, okay, that's it, click the switch, time to go home, close the lights.
I want to find out...
Put the cat out.
I want to find out who can keep the longest call up after the deadline.
Well, there's a gauntlet.
That's a good challenge.
They're going to inhibit new calls. But I think if you've got a call up and running at midnight, then that call will stay up.
Only you could come up with something. So- like I'm sorry.
If one of us had a CDMA phone, we'd do a bit of a phone in the fridge experiment.
Yeah, it could do that. Yeah, I gave up my CDMA phone.
You used to have one for a while.
I had one for a very long while. It was a very good phone. But I took up one of the upgrade offers because I needed a new phone for a particular purpose. So. That was the way to go. But, yeah, I mean, someone could phone the feedback line at midnight on their CDMA phone and see if we can get a recording of the last CDMA call.
Ever recorded on our feedback line. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That would be another challenge that we could throw out there.
How do we prove it? Could be a coffee cup in it for someone.
Well, definitely would be a coffee cup in it for somebody.
Could be a coffee cup if we can get a call like that. 1-300-664-882. If you've got a CDMA phone and you want to leave the feedback for Tech Talk Radio as the last CDMA call.
No, I've got a bit of a muck on the pluck with Jeff Booth, though. Your mate, Andrew.
I have no mates.
He was on...
Jeff Booth is the Managing Director of Telstra Countrywide, who are interested.
On government television tonight saying, we're very keen to hear from people who are having coverage difficulties with Next G.
I rang them.
Thank you very much.
Dropped in the line and he hasn't returned my call.
I started yelling at the television and my wife was saying, well, it's all right, don't yell at the TV. You wait till you're on TikTok. And okay, I will. So there we are. Yeah, he seemed so sincere and so honest and so caring.
Mm.
And I thought, have a good, long, hard look at yourself, fella.
Yes.
There's probably people out there right now trying to ring and say, look, I've got no coverage, but I can't I've got no coverage. I can't get through. Yeah. Or if they do get through, they get completely ignored, which was Andrew's experience.
No, I didn't get ignored. They just put me through.
No, after 47 minutes, they said, I will get someone to ring you back, and they
something
didn't.
Something like that. Yeah, in three days, I'm still waiting. That's about a month ago now. Yeah. Anyway, well, you know, they're busy people.
I'm sure.
And there'll be listeners out there going, will you stop bagging Telstra? Hey, listen, Telstra are doing some really good things at the moment. I was talking about this on ABC Adelaide today. Did you know?
It's a love-hate relationship, isn't it?
It is. It is. Well, they've got grants at the moment to try and get seniors, and those who are, you know, how's the word? It's like technologically challenged is probably a nice way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Involved in using computers and mobile technology, and Telstra are funding this. So if you've got a community group which is sort of, you know, out there in the role of educating people, get in touch with Telstra and they'll give you some money so you can get people into your environment and tell them how to use their mobile phones and their SMSs and their mobile data. I think that's a really good initiative.
That's a really fantastic idea. I've done some work in the past through my employment, my main business, where we've done work with retirement homes and doing computer courses in that sort of environment. And it's surprising how keen some of those people are to learn the new technologies.
Absolutely.
The only thing that's stopping them is that no one's ever shown them how. And, you know, someone who's, you know, probably older than us in the studio here or hasn't had the experience with the technology in the past. I mean, the potential for keeping in touch with a family that's, you know, dispersed to all parts of the globe and you know, keeping in touch with the grandkids or whatever it might be.
I took a talkback call today when I was on the radio on ABC, and a woman rang up and she said, I sent my first SMS the other night. My son sent me a text from Asia, wherever he was,
yep.
And she responded. And she said, it was so easy. All I did was I went down to my Telstra shop with my handheld and they texted for me.
But did they show her how to text so she can do it next time?
They did. They did.
Yep. And that's the thing. Once you show someone how to do that, it's a great, it's, you know, people learn new great ways of staying in touch. It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah, embrace the technology. Remember when you got your first microwave oven? You said, I'll never need one of those. I can use the regular oven.
That's right.
Cook on the hot plates. Well, let me see you deal with life now without a microwave
oven.
Couldn't
live without the thing.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Right, let's talk about some, you've got some emails and some feedback and things like that.
I do.
Dr. Ron, off you go.
I got a letter from three today. Remember we're talking.
What, they're writing to us or they're writing to you?
No, they're writing to me personally. Remember we said a couple of weeks ago Telstra were trying to move people to online billing?
Yes.
Three are doing the same thing, but they're going to charge you $2 an account to receive paper accounts.
Are they?
Yeah, you have to go online and opt in for the electronic billing.
But if you opt in, you get a $2 benefit.
Well, they won't introduce a new $2 charge. So I thought that's one to watch. If you're a three consumer, three subscriber, then hop onto their billing website and make sure you register if you want to avoid the $2 paper surcharge.
Mm.
Trying to save trees. We've got an email from GD through the week who says, guys, hate to say it, but breaking tech news on the website, while it shows the ticker tape, none of the links work. But then this. It was the Firefox pop-up blocker, says GD. Once the blocker was disabled, the links worked. Maybe you could warn listeners or put a note on your website under FAQ.
Consider yourself warned, listeners.
If you're clicking on the ticker tape and nothing pops up, then it could be your pop-up blocker.
Speaking of emails, the cynical Adam Turner has just sent an email in because he's listening to us live on the stream, obviously, at the moment.
Hello, Adam.
He'd probably be listening on the Shoutcast stream because he's a Mac person now, but we won't go there. He's basically said, why do you think Telstra are helping seniors to get online? And then the next sentence says, to drum up new customers, maybe?
Well, there's a point of view where there's nothing wrong with that.
No, exactly right. No, that's right. Conspiracy theories. We love them here on Tech Talk Radio. Do
Indeed.
You have any more?
I do. I have one more. We have a listener, Simon, and he says eBay has acquired pretty much all the auction websites that have become real competition for them over the years. Now, he was listening to our discussion a couple of weeks ago about PayPal being mandated for online sellers on eBay. Unfortunately, they have no real competition, but the question will be, if they get away with forcing everyone to use PayPal, will their stranglehold on online auction websites continue? Many, including myself, don't mind using PayPal, but we do not want to be forced into using it.
I think that's the issue, isn't it? Consumers want choice, and consumers do like choice. And if you're given the option of either using direct debit or PayPal, then I think that's, you know, needs some form of choice there. I agree. I agree, Simon.
I agree as well. Thanks for the feedback, Simon. I use direct credit where I can, like for local transactions. But overseas, I usually opt for the PayPal.
Can I just tell you, as a merchant, because I'm a, I have credit card facilities for the business as well as I use eBay and PayPal. The PayPal option is, in commission wise, it's the same as a credit card, if not slightly less than getting a commercial credit card deal through a major bank. And the good news is they don't charge those stupid ongoing fees, you know, the because we can type fees that banks tend to charge. So as a result, it actually is a more economical, viable way of running your business, and you don't have to pay up to $400 worth of fees each year just for the privilege of taking a credit card.
$12.50 account watering fee or whatever it's called.
No, it's called an annual surcharge with the Commonwealth Bank, and it's about $300.
Mm.
And then they charge you $11 a month on top of that or something. Anyway, I could be misguided, but I see them come in and go, oh, again? You know what it's like, those recurring debts.
I do know what it's like. Yeah, so there's our feedback. If you want to send us a feedback, send it to feedback at techtalkradio.com.au or post on the forum.
Hey, the newsletter's going great guns at the moment too. There's a lot of new subscribers. I was very disappointed. Someone unsubscribed today.
Oh.
I know. We don't normally get unsubscribers. It's terrible. I felt mortified. So I'm going to be contacting that person.
Let's shame them. What's their email
address?
No. maybe they're not listening to the show anymore.
It's quite legitimate to unsubscribe once in a while from a newsletter. Like, maybe they just changed the email addresses and subscribed under their new name.
That'll be it.
I'll check that out during the break. I'll get back to you on that one. I'll bring it up very shortly. Yes, and you're probably all aware of the dilemmas that Tech Talk Radio has had with our US host,
PowWeb.
PowWeb. Oh, yes.
Well, it's
PowWeb.
It's just an update. It's been going for near enough 3 weeks now, and I asked three simple questions. Tell me your surname, tell me why you disconnected us, and give me a point of contact to management. How many of those questions do you think have been answered?
Probably close to zero.
Actually, one. I got a surname off one guy, but each time the email comes in, it's a different guy.
It's a different person.
Surname. Yeah, yeah. Now we have it on good authority by someone out there who we'd like to get in touch with. If you're listening to us, please send us another email. It's very interesting reading your email. You know who you are.
We'd like to hear from you.
We have questions before we go further, so that'd be good. And no names, no pack drill, all that sort of stuff. Go via. Yeah. Anyway. That's where we're at the moment. I did send them another email last night saying, guys, it's taken 3 weeks to find a point of contact in your organization that I can ring and speak to, because I want to ring them up and ask them on the radio why they do what they do, because I do believe they are misleading the customers. They're competing in an environment where in this country you would be hauled across the coals from, but obviously in the United States it's a little different. So in our global community that we have these days, I think everyone has to be a little bit wary of buying products and services outside your own region, because you don't have the legalities there to protect the consumer like you do here.
Where's the business transaction taking place?
Somewhere in cyberspace. I guess the thing you do have is the chargeback option through your credit card if you're using a credit card type sort of arrangement.
You do. You can contact your credit card.
If you believe you haven't been provided, because I know as a merchant, as we were just talking about, the onus is on the supplier
the
of
merchant.
Goods to actually deliver what they say. And if they don't deliver what they say, then the banks will quickly be on the consumer side. So that's one good thing.
And it hurts too in the hip pocket, doesn't it, for the merchant?
It's like a bounce check. It's a $30 fee.
That's right.
In this country. I don't know what it is in the United States, but nonetheless, it's interesting times. All right, there you go. That's pretty much all our gossip during the course of the week. So obviously the big news this week, Telstra saying goodbye to CDMA tonight, which we've already touched on. Thanks for coming. It's been old technology, and it's been good technology, I think. It's worked very well across the course of Australia.
Well, yeah.
Still used in the US,
true.
Right, too. Very big in the US.
Oh, yes, and the same underlying technology is still in use on the 3G networks too. But one thing that I wanted to just remember back on, and I touched on this in a different field the other week, but if you think back to when Telstra turned off the old analog network and replaced it with CDMA, and the uproar that had back then...
No, they replaced it with GSM. CDMA came afterwards because nothing replaced the old analog
GSM
network.
GSM came in the cities... But analog remained
there's nothing in the bush.
In the bush. Analog remained in the bush until CDMA started up. And they couldn't turn off the analog network until the CDMA network provided equivalent coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's right. That's right, isn't it?
I think that's right.
Yeah. And there was uproar about, yes, it's not equivalent coverage, and my CDMA phone doesn't work here where my analog phone used to work here. And history repeats itself. And now people are fighting to keep the network that they were
They'll get used
up
to
in
it.
Arms about. Yeah.
They'll get used to it.
So...
I think that, yeah, the next-G network will grow on us and we'll come to love it.
Technically, the new next-generation network is a superior network. And Telstra has been saying that all along, and it's true.
It certainly ought to be based on the specs and the design.
But whether or not the antenna's in the right spot on the tower and you have the right handset, and normally it's the handset that's the dilemma.
I reckon there's a few antennas hanging wonky on towers as
well. I agree with you. I lodged a report on one of those. I still haven't heard
yeah. But, yeah, I think in time that we'll come to realise that it's a good thing.
Here's just a little note in respect to your comment before, Graham, on a press release from Telstra today. Mobile calls that take place at midnight will continue until 1 a.m.
Oh.
And Telstra assures that 000 calls commencing before midnight will be allowed to continue until finished.
Oh, that's big of them. What were they going to do? Just drop them?
I don't know. You know,
well, they're not. They've said they're going to continue until they're finished.
So why would you even bother putting it in the press release?
So you got to because
somebody would ask the question. That's why you'd bother putting it in the press release.
You did ask the question. There you go. There you go. So we can answer that. So you stick with us. You go, Blazers.
Laugh.
Can we talk about Windows?
Nearly started. Windows.
Yes. Windows XP may hit Vista sales. This is interesting. Microsoft.
Oh, what a shock!
Service Pack 3. Guess what? Is available now, sort of.
Yeah, today. Sort of, kind of, if you happen to be a manufacturer.
Yeah. No, today you can get it from the Windows download site, depending upon where you are. Today could be tomorrow, yesterday, in some parts of the world.
Depending on which version
of the
show. Yes.
I'm very confused. I hope you aren't, but that's the... Yeah, so very shortly, if you go to Microsoft.com/downloads, you will find under the XP within the next 24 hours, probably well and truly by now, if you're listening to us in other parts of the country on the pod or something, you can download Service Pack 3 for XP.
Yep.
The move may convince some firms that XP is still viable enough to let them skip Vista and hold out for its successor.
Yeah.
This has been the talk about Windows 7. A lot of gossip coming up here. But
yes.
yet, some of the powers that be at Microsoft have made some fairly interesting statements during the course of the last week. I don't know whether you've caught up on
about Vista's viability.
A couple of interesting ones, yes. like this one here. Ballmer admits that Vista is a work in progress.
Yep.
Now, hello? Wouldn't this make you stop and go, oh, do I really need Vista if it's work in progress?
Work in progress. We just rolled it out to 5,000 desktops in our government agency, and suddenly they're telling us that it's still a work in progress.
It took them 2 or 3 years and 2 service packs to get Windows XP right, but when they got it right, it was right.
Mm.
It says Microsoft Chief Executive Steve Ballmer has told delegates at the software giant's most valuable professional summit in Seattle that Windows Vista is a work in progress and the company is trying to learn from its mistakes.
Yeah.
He went on to say, I think we did a lot of things right and I think we have a lot of things we need to learn from Vista, Mr. Steve told the assembled independent developers.
Using the wrong language. Like, I appreciate what Graham's saying, but at the end of the day, if it's a released product, you expect to be able to buy it and use it, you expect it to work. And yes, there's going to be bugs and there's going to be problems, but on the scale of the issues that they've had with Vista, and when you put it side by side with XP, you think, well, why would I really have, if I've made that decision, if I made the right decision now?
Let's take the big step back. Vista was released around the same time that Leopard, the new Mac software, OS X, was released for the Mac.
Yep.
And was sort of, when was that, late last year, wasn't it? Middle of last year, if I recall correctly. Maybe it was pushed to market a little too soon to compete or to sort of, you know, do the,
well,
keeping the...
They're under enormous pressure to get stuff to market, aren't they?
Except I'm not sure that their whole philosophy isn't wrong. That no matter how long they left it, Vista was always going to be bigger and heavier and slower and require faster hardware than Windows XP did. Whereas going from the previous version to the current version of OS X with Macintosh, it got faster and sleeker and more optimized.
Mm.
So, and I think the hope is, and from the rumors that we're hearing and the buzz that we're hearing around Windows 7, which is the next version of Windows to come after Vista,
scheduled for the end of next year.
Yep, that Microsoft may have learned that lesson, that they may have learned that smaller, sleeker, faster is better.
It'll be interesting to see. They're actually learning a few other interesting lessons with the release of Mesh. Have you heard about Mesh yet?
Tell us about Mesh.
I will later on in the show, but if you go to mesh.com, you can have a bit of a sneak preview about what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
It's Microsoft having a bit of a go at Google. But anyway, that's something to talk about later in the show. Other emails, or other press releases that came out this week, along the Windows XP line. Once again, Steve Ballmer said that Microsoft could keep XP if customers want it.
Customers want it.
Absolutely. It goes on to say that Microsoft could rethink plans to phase out its Windows XP operating system by June 30 if customers show they want to keep it, but so far they have not. I don't know who he's talking to, but everyone I know in the streets loves XP.
Yep.
There's a lot of applications that I can't run on Vista, and as a result, I'm keeping on XP. And I even got an email from someone in the United States before, too, who I don't actually have here. I'm sorry, whoever you are. You know who you are. Who said that Dell are actually going to extend the supply of Windows XP on their machines
that
beyond the end
Oliver.
Was it? Oliver. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oliver. G'day, Oliver.
To continue supplying Windows XP on new machines after the supposed deadline.
Yes.
When it was supposed to be no longer available.
Dell. Yes. Was it Dell?
Dell.
Anyway, Microsoft has announced that it would stop licensing Windows XP to computer makers and end retail sales by June the 30. So
now, what sort of a way is it to run a business to stop supplying a product that the customers actually actively want to pay money for?
You have to wonder about the business model, don't you? But I think they're just trying to foist Vista upon us again, because they stopped it and then they put it back big
time.
That's
all very well, but yeah, if customers say, I want that one, then, you know, why wouldn't you sell it to them?
Not just one or two customers, it's a steady stream.
That's right, yes.
Why wouldn't you maintain it?
Some customers have complained that they were unable to buy XP at retail stores or as consumers, basically, so you just can't buy it. They say that in order to get XP, they must buy their computers as a small business. Well, yeah. If you're not a small business, that sort of rules out a fair few people of the marketplace, I would have thought.
Mm.
Anyway, and another interesting bit of news, too, with SP3 for Windows XP. It's a fairly popular bit of software, highly sought after piece of software. Yes. There's a few pre-release versions of it doing the rounds in the torrent world for those that Azurus and those sort of things.
Mm.
And can I just say, beware.
Oh, I never trust
those. Personally, I wouldn't trust that.
If you have got a copy of Service Pack 3 for Windows XP at the moment sitting on your machine, please just delete it for your own sanity, your own sake. Who knows what might be lurking
I'd always be wary of downloading executables from those sorts of networks.
Yes. Yeah.
There's only one trusted source for this, Microsoft.com.
Support.microsoft.com and follow your nose. Don't go straight to isohunt.com and start punching an SP3.
It'll be out soon. It's not worth the risk.
That's it.
And finally for Microsoft in this, before we take a break, is last Tuesday, the 22nd of April, something remarkable happened. Microsoft decided it was time to release some new Vista Ultimate Extras. You guys use Vista Ultimate at all? Anyway, you get extras, apparently. Oh. So there we go. They're actually releasing a whole heap of new little things that plug into your Vista for whatever reason to try and dangle a carrot and get you to, oh, yeah, I'll give it a go.
I'm sure they're highly effective business tools like a new background for the clock or something like that, are they?
Probably something like that. Let me just do a send and receive here in the laptop in the studio and I'll just see if Adam's got a point of view on that. No, nothing from Adam at this point in time, which I thought was...
My apologies if I'm being too cynical. I don't know quite what it is, but yeah.
Different folder icons and important stuff.
Maybe.
Yes. Watch out for the cloud. We'll talk about that very shortly. Take a break. Back with more. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb.
Hi, I'm Rico Malver, Managing Director of Microsoft Research in Redmond in the U.S. Be sure to tune in to Tech Talk Radio soon when I'll be talking about the future of technology.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters
voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service just on a...
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Yes, you are. We're back. Welcome. Hello. I'm Andrew McComb, sitting across the panel today.
Dr. Ron.
Dr.
Present.
Ron. And Dr. Graham. How are you? Yes?
Good. Yes, good.
You did some research while we were in the break there.
Yes,
what
I
did
was,
you come up with?
I was feeling guilty that I might have misjudged Microsoft over this Vista Ultimate Extras thing. So I hit the IT Wire website where there's a wonderful article there by one of Adam's colleagues. And...
Timing's everything, Adam. You missed the email. You missed the boat,
so. So, yes, the first of the Ultimate Extras is some new Dream Scene updates.
Oh, good.
Which involve photos of such things as an upside-down triangular ice, which is slowly melting.
Oh, good. Adam, you should ring in. We'll put you to air if you listen.
This is an Ultimate Extra. The other Ultimate Extras appear to involve sound schemes.
Oh, good.
So that'll help too with a sound scheme based on the clinking of glass or something.
That'll help with productivity and speed.
It will, yep. Yeah. That'll be a useful business tool for us.
A bit of extra processor power there, just gone, just like that.
Oh, yes.
There was a thing back in the good old days of Windows 95 called the Windows 95 Plus Pack.
Oh, I remember that.
Yep.
Yeah, that had full of useless things in it
CD
too.
CD-ROM
really,
full of completely useless things like wallpapers, sound schemes and those types of things. Yes.
Yes, and at the time no one had a computer that was fast enough to run it.
Oh, to run Windows 95.
Well, to run the Plus Pack, yeah.
Oh, the Plus Pack, yeah.
There you go.
How's your Ubuntu going, Doctor? I remember we had an email back from a listener a while back about a bit more Linux, a bit more Ubuntu and
it's
stuff like
that.
It's
been a new version just
that's
hit
why
the
I asked.
Streets.
Ah, yes. Now, what was this one? The
Hardy Heron was the code name.
Yes, here it is. My first odd experience is a Linux Ubuntu 8.04 Virgin no longer. I popped my last... Oh, no, we won't go there. Installing Hardy Heron. Where do they get the names for this?
Well, they keep...
should read these first.
They keep incrementing the... They have the names. They have like an adjective and a noun, and they have like types of birds, don't they?
Yeah, and that. Well, have they all been birds? No.
What's the one I'm running? What's 606? I'm trying to think now.
Oh. 700 meg ISO download file. Have you got it yet, boys? Have you downloaded it?
I haven't downloaded it yet. No, but I must. I must.
They're named a bit like cyclones, aren't they?
They're
sequentially through the alphabet.
That's right. That's right. They are moving sequentially through the alphabet. You're spot on, Graham.
It says up on my screen popped the Wubi installer. Wubi.
I've got Feisty something. I can't remember. That's terrible off the top of my head. I should be able to remember that.
Oh, well, there you go.
What's that one? Wubi something?
The Wubi installer. I chose to create an 8 GB file on my C drive, typed in my password and pressed install. And off it went. Wubi then went straight into the ISO that was the same download folder and proceeded to install. It did some MD5 checking.
Yep.
What's MD5?
MD5 is it's like a fancy sort of a checksum. It's to confirm that everything's okay and there's not been a problem with the download. Ooh.
There you go, you learn something every day. But after a few minutes, Wubi had informed me that the installation process was complete. Would I like to reboot now or later? Oh, so you still have to reboot on that as well. There you go.
You do.
Mm, warty warthog. Horty. Hoary hedgehog. Breezy badger. Dapper Drake.
Dapper Drake I'm running. Dapper Drake, that's one. That's 606. What's the
sounds like something
one
out of Looney Tunes.
Feisty Fawn.
Feisty Fawn, yes,
there
Feisty
you
Fawn.
Go.
Where do they get these names from?
And the next one coming up, I've no idea. The next one coming up is going to be Intrepid Ibex, whatever
Intrepid
that might mean.
Ibex?
Yep.
That's I love
terrific.
This.
Isn't we that should, great?
Absolutely. Beats Leopard, beats XP, doesn't
does it?
It
beats the cats.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. All right. Nokia Australia have launched a music download program, a site. Have you?
Yeah, they have to compete with Apple's iTunes, iStore.
iStore, yes. But it's an Australian version. I don't know whether it's international or anything like that. Maybe we should... well, actually, Adam's going to tell us all about it. So
good.
We'll go to the couch. We'll put our feet up for a bit, go and get a coffee. And Adam will tell us all about this, and we'll talk more about it after The View.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Subscription content services like the Australian Nokia Music Store could be the industry's last stand against piracy. The online Nokia store was launched last week with great fanfare, but the $10 per month all-you-can-eat subscription service was treated as a footnote. To me, it's the big news. I have no intention of buying music downloads from Nokia, Apple, or anyone else. I prefer to buy CDs, rip them in the bitrate and format of my choice, and then put the disc aside as a backup. A streaming subscription service means I don't have to worry about digital rights management licenses, format lock-in, or keeping backups of my music and licenses. It all just lives in the cloud, and I listen to whatever I want, whenever I want. The feeling of freedom a subscription music service gives you is quite amazing. It's like breaking into a music store after hours with a big sack, except it's all legal. Nokia's subscription music service is far from perfect. For starters, it only works with Windows XP or Vista, and Internet Explorer 6 or 7, which really sucks because I spend most of my day working on a MacBook. It also feels slow and clunky compared to the iTunes Store. You can't cache tracks on your local machine to save bandwidth, which is annoying for those with limited monthly downloads. The other shortcoming is that tracks are only 128 or 192 kilobits per second, and you can't copy them to CD or a portable music player. You need to buy tracks to do this. Screw that. The range of artists on the Nokia site seems to be good. Of the 20 or so I searched for, the only ones I didn't find were the Beatles, which is to be expected, and the Black Crowes. Admittedly, I have bogan taste, so I was looking for stuff like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, The Eels, The Violent Femmes, The Smashing Pumpkins, Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith, Rage Against the Machine. It turns out Nokia doesn't have a deal with Warner Music yet, which is why the Black Crowes weren't there. On the Nokia service, you can buy tracks, or listen to a 30-second clip, or stream them, or add them to your wish list, which is really just a way of bookmarking things. I really like the Mix Me option that lets you fill your playlist with random tracks from that artist. I was a bit annoyed to discover that a few albums were only available to buy and not stream, although for some of them the streaming button was grayed out, but then when you open the album, you could click on each track individually to create a streaming playlist. You can also save custom playlists, which is really useful. If you're prepared to overlook the service's flaws, you can rediscover all those albums that you haven't listened to for years, stuff you owned as a kid on tape or LP that's been lost in the sands of time. You can also dip into music you otherwise wouldn't listen to. The Nokia Music Store makes the concept of owning music irrelevant, and thus the concept of stealing music irrelevant as well. It's faster to find music through this service than it is to steal it using BitTorrent. It's clear by now that digital rights management does not stop piracy. Heavy-handed legal tactics don't work either. It's time for content providers to put away the stick and try the carrot for a change. I'll happily pay $10 a month for the convenience of having the music there when I want it. I'd say $10 is about the right price point for mass adoption. It's clunky compared to iTunes, but it's faster and easier to find music on the Nokia Music Store than BitTorrent. Were someone to launch a similar service for video in Australia, they'd easily win my business. The best thing with the Nokia Music service is there's no lock-in. I can cancel my subscription at any time. I'll almost certainly jump ship when the Australian iTunes Store eventually launches a subscription music service that runs on Mac and Windows, especially if I can transfer tracks to an iPod. Meanwhile, I'm going to enjoy gorging myself on Nokia's All You Can Eat Music Fest.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now, you guys are fairly pessimistic when it comes to music downloads. Well done, Graham.
That's a word from our sponsor.
There you go. Nokia, ringtone. Yeah, very good. That was live, by the way.
Am I the only person that when I heard about this service many months ago, I thought it's something to do with your mobile phone?
I must admit, I thought the same thing as well. Oh, great, you can listen to your music on your mobile.
Well, that's what I thought. They're branding it as Nokia, but Nokia's running it, but it's not actually anything to do with your mobile telephone, is it?
No, you go to the website and download. Mm. I think it's good. A subscription music service has got to be, I think, a really good model for, A, preventing piracy, as Adam alluded to, but also you can, yeah. There's something about going into a record shop and listening to all the music that you used to listen to as a kid and going, oh, yeah, I remember that. Some of you kids out there aren't kids yet, so you've got a bit to go. But, yeah, you know what I mean? All the old, you know, tracks.
Yeah.
The old vinyl that you used to have. There's a generation out there that has no idea what I'm talking about.
Adam raises some very good points as well. You're paying for access to a library, so no longer do you need to actually search for tracks and download them and store them. You're paying for access to everything. So yep. You're doing away with the whole concept of stealing music or owning music.
It's a different way of thinking about it, isn't it?
It is, very different way. And it sounds like everyone's a winner in this.
And if everyone chips in a few bucks and goes and pays for that type of access,
it can work, and it can work very well.
It will work. And I think this is going to be the model that movies are going to have to look at too down the track. I think we spoke last week, Dr. Ron, about the new Video Easy little, you know, you can jump your movie onto your USB stick at the shop and...
Yeah, or drop your iPod in a dock at the movie store and get your transfer
movie. I think potentially we're going to, you know, you get your subscription fee, you know, you might pay $20 a month for it and you can have as many movies as you like. There is a limit to how many, well, to some people, there is a limit to how many movies you can watch.
Yeah, but it's not how many movies you watch, it's how many movies you've got access to, so you can watch the one that happens to appeal at that particular moment. And yeah, I think the same thing will happen, that you'll have a massive server somewhere down the street on the end of a bit of fibre, and the entire library of movies will be available to you.
And what's the one thing that we need for instant on, always there access to streaming video?
Fast broadband, please. Real broadband. Broad broadband.
Not skinny broadband like we've got now.
We'll talk about that. In fact, that's a really good throw, Graham. We should talk about broadband right now.
What am I throwing to? I had no idea.
During last Thursday, just before Anzac Day, the Australian Bureau of Statistics put online the...
Oh, they did.
Hey, that was a good throw.
It was very good. They put on.
So we're not getting to what they actually did. They put online.
They put online. Now, don't interrupt, Dr. Ron. They put online the current internet activity in Australia as of December 2007.
Mm.
What they did is they took a good cross-section of all the ISPs. It is here. I'm just waiting for the screen to refresh and scroll down a bit. Andrew, just talk amongst yourself.
Oh, I've got a black and white and paper in front of me. I can't see it either.
They got 421... ISPs.
Operating ISP, that's it. Yes, contributed to the estimates.
It's interesting, actually. Have you noticed the number of ISPs falling away? In 2005, there were 689. In 2006, there were 467. And by December 2007, there's 421. And if Telstra have their way, there'll be a couple by the end of this time next year.
Yeah, well, gone are the days when you can set up an ISP in your spare room with a bank of modems and an ISDN connection, and you can, you know, be your own small-time ISP. That just doesn't work that way anymore.
Well,
you've got to be able to do broadband and, yeah.
Yeah, you resell stuff these days.
That's right.
But it was quite interesting, the actual take-up of the new wireless technology, which is where it's all going to go. Let's face it.
Nonsense.
People don't want wired devices anymore. We all like to walk outside with our laptops, PDAs, cell phones, mobile phones.
Maybe wireless local area network, but the actual delivery of the broadband, you know, you can't have everybody having that delivered over wireless. It just cannot work. The spectrum is a finite resource, a resource in very short supply.
But why do you say that? Telephony's heading that way.
Yes.
Answer the question.
You don't say yes in a positive way.
No, there's problems there as well. But particularly with so much telephony being using up that precious spectrum, the room for broadband is even less. It's a squeeze.
Well, dial-up's on the way out, but we knew that.
That's right.
What was it, 4,177, sorry, let me try that again, 4.1 million subscribers in 2005, down to 1.8 million in the end of 2007.
On dial-up.
On dial-up, yep. Yeah. And dial-up includes, I think, what's the old technology they used to use? ISDN.
ISDN
is what I'm thinking of. That includes dial-ups as well. Mm-hmm. So they're on the way out. The thing which I guess was quite interesting to me was the fact that the ADSL speeds have not increased like the subscribers have increased.
Yeah, because...
Is that a surprise to anyone?
Well, no, because of the certain marketing practices of certain ISPs that are pushing new subscribers onto very low, not even broadband speeds that are counted as, you know, broadband just because they're faster than dial-up by a little bit.
Let's talk about the total population of broadband users at the moment. There's currently 7.1 million Australians connected, or there's 1 million connections, so there's probably many families that share that.
Yeah, that's fair
enough. A family
of
four in there. So we're actually now becoming a fairly connected country. And I don't know how that compares to overseas. I reckon everybody overseas in the major, you know, OECD type environments would certainly have some form of broadband, probably a damn sight faster than what we've got in this country. But considering where we were 2 years ago, that's up to basically 2.1 mil. We had 5.98 in 2005 million, and we're now up to 7.1 million.
Do we know how many people are actually using the internet? How many people have access to the internet? That tells us the number of account holders.
Well, there's 7.1 million connections. Now, if you go to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, it's what are they looking at? Around 22 million people in Australia.
So you've got at least
a 1 in 4 factor there, I would have thought. 7 million to 21 or 22 million. Or maybe a bit less, 1 in 3.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that. It tells us that there's at least 7.1 million people connected, but obviously there's more than that. It's more than...
Yeah, because...
connections are shared.
Yep.
We'd have to... Yeah, I'd like to know what that figure is.
Just on the speed side of things, this is where all the ruckus is about in with Telstra and the federal government. 256 kilobits per second to less than 512, which is basically... Yes, Graham calls it broadband. It's the basic entry level where a lot of mums and dads would probably connect. You know, oh, what do we need? Oh, let's go with the cheap option or whatever it is that they choose. There was 659,000 in 2005, and we're up to – we've actually more than doubled that. There's 1,500 and, or 1.5 million now at the end of 2007 on that slowest of slow speeds. Well, actually, there's one slower than that, 64K, wasn't it? That was one that was – really?
I don't think anyone's selling that as an actual service. I think that's what they lock it down to if you exceed your limit on some services.
Yes. But if you look at the 1.5 megabits per second, which is the, how would you say,
that's the
T1 standard, or what we all used to have, the fastest ADSL1 until Telstra decided to uncap that.
Yeah, that was the fastest we could get in the old days when Telstra had control of everything. Yep.
Yeah, of our 7.1 million people online at the moment, we've currently got just over 1.04 million people sitting on that sort of speed.
Okay.
Yep. Which is,
it's fastish. Yeah. It's getting there.
It's not too bad. But the ADSL2 is certainly on the way up. We've got just short of 1.3 million people on ADSL2. That's between 8 megs and 24 megabits per second.
Yep.
It means probably sort of, to put everything into perspective, of the total broadband of ADSL or speeds that we've currently got, of our 7.1 million subscribers or services that are connected in this country, the slowest speed is still the most popular. That is the 256K to 512 region still has the most number of people connected, which... And I think is indicative of where we're at in broadband in this country.
Well, yeah, there's the factor of the marketing that pushes people that way, and there's definitely a factor of the consumers are learning to work out what's really value. And I think that consumers over the next couple of years, that, you know, you're looking back from over the last 2 or 3 years. If we look forward over the next 2 or 3 years, consumers are going to become a lot more savvy and realise that their 256 connection perhaps isn't as good as they believed it might have been. And as their contracts come to an end, they'll look for something better.
Yes, because that's right. Because some of these telcos,
when you go in and it's your first experience of any new product, and your first experience of broadband's no different, you know, you don't know what you're getting into. But when you come around to renew those contracts the next time round, you're a lot smarter.
I think also with the advent of rich media on the internet, the movies, the radio.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, for example, ABC Playback, which is about to kick off, where you, if you're not familiar with that service, the government broadcaster in this country is actually going to put online every program that's basically been to air in the last month for a delayed streaming download.
Yep.
That will blow a lot of those really early broadband contract packages out of the water in one fell swoop.
Oh, yes. You'll exceed your limit just watching one episode of Media Watch. Plus, it'll be slow and choppy and it won't work properly.
Yes, it will. And the display, they do display big warnings as you go into the site there. But even look at our habits nowadays of listening to streaming radio. But there's people listening to this program on the other side of the world thanks to the technology of computers. Now,
that's right.
That's a fairly sizable, if you leave it on like you leave your radio on around the house. And I must admit, I do at work. Once I click a stream, it's on for a few hours.
Oh, you're not alone in that either.
The bandwidth can just sneak up and sneak up and sneak up. And there's a few ISPs that actually look after people if you're a, like I think Internode, give unmetered bandwidth to a lot of streaming radio stations that they support. So if you're into that sort of stuff, look around.
Remember the good old days of Pandora before it was locked down.
Pandora.
You'd kick off a Pandora stream.
Music service.
Yeah, you just listen to music and, like you said, Andrew, you would turn it on and you'd leave it running in the background like you do with a conventional radio. And it would just sit there, and after a day of downloading nice high-quality stereo sound, you have another 400 or 500 or 700 meg just clocked over on your account. Yeah, and that will kill people on small accounts.
That's right.
So it'll be interesting to see where we are, even this time next year. Let another 12 months of data flow under the bridge, and we'll see how people have adapted to it. I think mobile broadband is certainly going to be in a fairly high demand, I think, over the next little bit as the prices come down. Just for example, Hutchison 3 have released yet another broadband package because they had this $15 with a two-year contract sign-up thing and you get a free modem with it the other day. They've now released a 500 meg package, which is probably perfect for someone who's just checking emails when they're out of the office or they're using the broadband to just log into a website. Nothing huge, but certainly
just somebody who needs to keep their calendar up to date while they're out and about, that sort of thing.
You pull over and you just check your mail or you do that, which is very common on a laptop these days.
Absolutely.
$15 a month, no contracts, just outright purchase for 500 meg data.
And the reason that Three keep coming out with these new deals, of course, is that all the others, every time Three come out with one, that the others come out with their competitive ones as well. So it really is a competitive market at the moment.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone come that aggressive in the marketplace. No,
they've definitely been the market leaders. They have come up with some great deals. Yeah. But
and that's city-centric.
It is dragging the rest of the market, into a much better price situation.
So watch this space. 12 months' time, we'll be interested to see if we're sitting here saying, well, look at how broadband's picked up in speed. One can only hope. Yeah. This fibre to the node maybe get a bit of a leg up. But still,
Of course, by then we'll be wanting to stream our high-definition content and it'll be slow again.
You know, the government has...
bandwidth is enough bandwidth?
Well, that's what I'm just about to say. The government's put this 12 megabit bandwidth thing in place. Oh, yeah, that's what we're aiming for.
Mm.
12 meg might be right for now and tomorrow and the next day, but what about 2 or 3 years down the track?
Yeah, you're going to want to stream high-def content straight into your home cinema, and 12 meg's going to look not quite good enough.
But you're going to want to stream high-def content into your home cinema in your room. I'm going to want to do it in my room out the back, and someone else is going to be wanting to listen to Pandora in the lounge room.
And then Andrew will upload a year's worth of Tech Talk Radio up to the new server because the ISP's dropped the ball again, and it'll all fall apart.
That's right, and...
It did take a while to do that, didn't it? All right, let's go and have another coffee and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And if you'd like to converse with us, you can do so by sending us an email to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Or as the panel was just promoted, Graham, how's the panel going these days? There was a good suggestion about podcasting there, which we should adapt over.
The forum.
Put it to the vote tonight.
The forum. The forum's going team. Great guns,
What's anything, how the subscribers going? New subscribers? Plenty of them?
We've got a couple of new subscribers,
We have. I haven't jotted their names down, but Graham might be able to bring some up.
Wish I could bring their names to mind just at the minute, but welcome if you've just joined the forum recently. It's good to have you on board.
Very good. Go and sign up for the newsletter too.
Thanks for the user who sent in the suggestion about the file names and all that sort of stuff, because, we're going to adopt that, aren't we?
I think so. We'll put it to the board tonight ratified.
I think that was definitely a good idea,
All in favour, say aye.
Aye. Good. Okay, done. Next business. All right. my goodness me. What are we up to now? Google, still a dominant search engine. Well, how about that? Did you know that? Google still being the dominant search engine?
I would have guessed that if I was pressed, yes.
Who are they going to be falling behind if they do start falling behind?
Everybody.
That's right. They're not going to, though, are they?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so. Yeah. There has been some speculation recently about whether the growth of Google's share of the paid click market is faltering. But new figures for March show that it continues to be the dominant search. Now, this is about the US market, because here in Australia, according to Hitwise, Google just shines above everybody else by a million miles. So in the US, it's slightly different news. But WebPro News reports Nielsen on data showing Google snared 58.7% of the online search in the United States in March 2008, a 25.5% increase on the same time last year, with some 4,000 4.7 million US searches a month. That's not bad use of a search engine, I wouldn't have thought.
No, it's pretty good. I remember reading about the analysis of how they measure their pay-per-clicks. And there were some people saying that the pay-per-clicks had actually dropped. And Google were responding by saying, no, there's a very simple explanation for that. They dropped because we're becoming more targeted and also because we're increasing revenues in terms of pay-per-click. So everyone's a winner. They're saying the people that are web browsing are winners because they're getting more targeted advertisements, getting less advertisements. The sponsors themselves are actually getting more money, more revenue. So don't just focus purely on the number of clicks that we're reporting.
So the top ads that were less targeted but and more broad are getting less clicks, but the more specific ads are getting more clicks.
That's what they're saying. Yeah. That's what they're saying.
No, that's good. And, you're saying that Google's much stronger, retains its strong position in Australia.
Oh, it's dominant like you wouldn't believe in this country.
Well, that's encouraging in terms of Australia's being discerning consumers of this sort of technology.
Well, I think people are now actually have learnt how to use a search engine.
Despite the ACCC.
Why do you say this?
Oh, with their fussing over the Trading Post and sponsored links, which I think Google does really
well. Oh, that was
just
a storm in a teacup,
yes,
I would have thought.
Yes.
Really. Google was well ahead of its nearest competitor in Yahoo, which achieved just over 1.48 million searches, which was 18% of the total market. So 58% as opposed to 18%. That just goes the competitive factor, really.
I read on Blogwell, which is Lydia Davis's
That's a good read.
Blog. It is a good read. She was saying that Google is starting to cache who is information. I'm going to have to explain that.
Yes.
So if
I've tried that here. I can't get it to work yet.
I can't get it to work either. I'm glad that you say that, Andrew. It's not just me. Potentially, it's Google.com that's doing it, but .au.
Google have these things called operators where you can actually type in something into the Google search bar, such as define, colon, and put in your word that you're looking for, and it'll give you a definition of that particular word.
Well, one that Graham educated me to only a couple of weeks ago was site. So you can specify the site that you want the search to be done in.
Yeah, so if you want to find a particular model number, but you want to find it on the manufacturer's website, you say, X346 site colon IBM.com, and it'll find that machine on the IBM website.
Within that site. Now, the who is one refers to the owner or the operator of a domain name.
Yes, I've typed in who is colon techtalkradio.com.au and it doesn't know what you're talking about yet, in Australia anyway.
It's the information about who's the registered owner of a domain name is what in the who is, yeah.
Yeah, that's what that, if you could, there's many ways to find it, but hopefully Google will be sort of presenting that information to you. Did you know that you can use lyrics? One of the two, whether I don't know if it's plural or single. If you're looking for the lyrics of a song, lyrics is an operator within Google as well.
Oh, is it? So you can type like lyrics, colon, space, and then the lyric.
I didn't know.
Yes. Okay. Yes, you can use the word lyrics. So if you've got your favourite song or those pesky words are just going through your mind.
And you want to find out.
What song was that?
You can't get out of your head.
Just do that quite often.
Just hit Google, put lyrics, colon in front of it, and then type those words there, and it'll probably tell you what song it is.
You learn all sorts of stuff on this show, don't you?
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it?
Have to come back. That's good.
Goodness,
good work, Google.
You know, they do a sterling job over there. I'm wondering if they're going to have Developers Day this year. There's been no mention of it or anything like that, because they did that last year.
You had a ball, didn't you?
Went up to Sydney for Google Developers Day.
You had to sit on the beanbags and everything.
It was terrific. Yeah. The blogging corner there was lovely. Got to meet a few people.
A little hot spot.
Oh, the whole place was hot. I actually ended up flattening all my batteries there. It was very but they had battery charging. But they thought of everything. They had a battery charging station.
That's a fantastic idea.
And all that sort of stuff. And sit there and blog and do all your stuff online, but as you would for the world's largest search engine. Now, whilst we're on the subject of usability in the internet, customers check out reputation of businesses online. Once again, something which in the marketing world is sort of, we all know this, but there are a lot of people out there that still probably go, oh, that's a good idea. So I ask you this question before I read this article, Dr. Ron. What sort of value do you place on an organization's website?
Fairly high.
Why?
Fairly high. Because a company's online presence is going to give you an indication of their commitment to the customer service, how they want to appear to people who are contacting them for the first time.
Yes.
Their credibility.
Ah, that's the word I was looking for, yes.
Their technical expertise. If it's a technical organization and they've got a crappy website, you're going to think, well, do these people know what they're doing? Potentially not.
No, that's very true. And that's the point that I make exactly in respect to 72% of respondents to a survey of over 300 people said they go online to check out a business's reputation for dealing fairly with customers before making a purchase. And 74% will make a purchase or not, depending on what they find.
Mm. Now, that's interesting, though. You say they go online, but do they go to that company's website or do they go to Google and type in the company's name and see what people are saying about them?
Well, we're talking websites here, so reading between the lines, we're going to the .com domain or the .com.au domain to actually look at the sign. Because I know, because I build websites for, you know, corporations and the likes, and it is vitally important to make your site as easy and as simple to navigate as possible, because otherwise you will give the user the wrong experience when you come to your website.
Yeah, no doubt.
And the more classier, the better looking websites just inspire and sort of ooze confidence. If you go to a lovely website, yep, you go, wow, that looks like a very well built professional website. You go, yep, what a good organization. Then you go to some websites and you go, oh, I can't find anything. What's that text doing strange sitting up there? You know, it's messy.
The only thing that works against this theory, though, Andrew, is that the scam artists are going to have the neatest, the flashiest, the nicest websites.
There's a problem with the scam artists. They can't spell.
Some of them can't.
Yeah, but they don't, do they? Have you seen a scam website that's polished and convincing?
Well, I've certainly seen websites of companies that make the company out to be much bigger and much fancier than it really is. That's I'm not talking about your basic, you know, buy your drugs here sort of website. I'm talking about, you know, a company that's, you know, operating out of a post office box. They're, you know, reselling widgets that they've bought from someone else, but they've got a really flash website.
Let me tell you about that. One of the things which really irks me is if businesses don't put a proper trading address or street address on their website. That, yep, really, and a lot of large companies do it. And
well, of course, all Australian companies should have their ABN on their website.
Well, it's a mandatory requirement by law, I would have thought, to have your ABN or your ACN numbers up there
which
online.
Which, of course, does give you some contact information.
Too right. But to find websites where people live behind post office boxes, yep, and mobile phone numbers, just, it doesn't have that air of,
again, it's a credibility issue, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You read it and you think, where can
I... credibility, I think you have to judge you can't judge credibility looking at the website, because it can be a fancy, nice website, but you don't know anything about the company behind it.
And it can work the other way as well. It depends on the company, the services or the products they provide. It could be a fairly bare bones, fairly Spartan website,
yep,
but they might be in the business of... I could be in the business of doing anything, but yeah, nothing to do with technology. And they think, well, I'll have a go. I'll get a bit of an online presence happening. I'll put a placeholder there and a website. And in, yep, actual fact, they do a fantastic job at what they do, which might be delivering hay bales or something,
yeah,
to stud farms. I don't know. But in terms of an online presence, there's not much there.
Hmm. So I think in terms of working out the credibility and the true nature of a company, you have to go further than their own website and go out and have a look and see what other people are saying about them.
I love this program. I just got an email in saying that the Developers Day is about to happen for Google.
Oh, fantastic.
while we're sitting here talking about things. What else was I going to say? I was awfully distracted by that.
I'm sorry. We've drifted from the topic, have we? We're talking about websites and credibility.
Websites credibility.
Yes.
Yes. Very much an important thing, I think, in this day and age when it comes to the development of customer relations and things like that. One of the things you've made a very, very valid point there, Graham, about the fishes and things like that. A lot of people, it's quite easy to grab a website and replicate it and put it up on a phishing site and things like that.
Yeah,
so you do,
yeah,
need to be wary of those sort of things.
Yep. Just because it looks good doesn't mean it is as good as it looks.
Yeah, check out the bona fides and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Email is also another interesting sort of concept. Everyone's been being surveyed lately, which is good, I guess. Consumers are generally positive about receiving emails with new products and deals from businesses they buy from. Once again, this is according to a new survey that came out by a company called Marketing Charts in the United States. Almost 60% of the 2,500 people in the US survey said that they like getting emails from businesses that they sort of buy from regularly because it provides them with relevant information. Now, that's yep, doubled from the same time last year.
Mm.
So email marketing is by far not disappearing.
I suspect because companies are getting better at it. They're getting better at doing what people actually want.
You think?
Do you think that's the case?
Maybe. I think there is a skill in doing proper online email marketing.
Yeah. You've got to get your message out there without ticking people off.
Yeah. If you look at the busy professional or the busy anybody these days, if you get a... Let's take, for example, reading a newspaper, whether it be a paper newspaper or something online. If you read the first paragraph, normally you've read enough on that topic already, haven't you? Unless it grabs you and says, yes, I'm really interested in this. And then you turn the page or you move on to the next article.
Yep.
Same laws of principles apply in emails. If you tease someone and say, click here for more information, that's all you need. You don't need a huge spiel about something. You can certainly put an editorial up there. But if you're talking about mainstream sort of products or services which are coming out online, we're offering this new product. Click here to have a look. That's all your newsletter needs to be. And people, if they are interested, will go and have a look.
Hmm. And yeah, that's exactly the way that newsletters can work. But, people do marketing in forms other than newsletters. They send out a list of specials or they send out
Now, there is a bad side.
Yeah,
there is a bad side.
There's always a bad side.
The survey also found that there can be a downside to this email marketing. 32% of the respondents said that their opinion of companies is diminished if they receive too many emails or with too general content.
Yep. So targeting your content to the people.
So
I'll tell you what I find with email that I receive that relates to companies I deal with at work, and that's that it needs to be in proportion. If I get an email every second day from a company that I buy something from once every 6 months, I'm going to get pretty ticked off with that company. I'm not going to want to deal with that volume of email for that amount of business. If I am buying something from a company, if I'm dealing with them every week and I get an email from them every week, then that seems to be in balance to me.
You know what annoys me is when you subscribe to an organization, and I do, doing what we do for Tech Talk Radio, to IT-related things, they seem to think that it's okay to send me information about things which are completely irrelevant to what I want. You know, they go, oh, look at this new product or service which Billy Blogs is selling. And you can tell it's a blatant advertisement. And all they're sending the email for is it's because it is an advertisement. It's nothing to do with the magazine or the content or whatever it is. And that really irks me.
Yeah, that's where the relevance and the targeting comes in. Yeah,
they should know what's relevant to you and what isn't relevant to you.
I've unsubscribed to a lot of those it really ticks me off, that sort of junky email, because it's virtually verging on spam. I don't want to know about that. I want to know about what's in your magazine or what's in your newspaper or what's happening out there.
Well, in that sort of situation, spam is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? If you want it, then it's not spam. But if it's annoying you, then it's spam.
Absolutely. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. It's time for a break.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, that you are. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb and Graham Callaghan and Dr. Ron sitting across the panel here this evening as we chill out, really. It's a very relaxing show this evening. There's still a few more bits to gossip about. Let's talk about hacking and things like that, because it's going from bad to worse at the moment if you haven't read any of the mainstream press. And have you heard of the Fast Flux?
Excuse me?
Have you heard of Fast Flux?
This is not another Ubuntu release, is it?
No, it could be, but it's not one of those things from Back to the Future either. The old flux.
Oh, the flux capacitor.
Remember that?
Reverse the polarity of the neutron flow.
Nothing to do with that. I received a phishing email during the course of the week, as probably most people did. In this instance, it was from. It was a PayPal thing. You know, we get them at the feedback address because somehow or other some moron thinks that we subscribe to do our PayPal shopping through feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. So they're sort of somewhat sadly mistaken.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, they came back with an email address. It was something like, I can tell you, it was PayPal at, says he's looking for userupdates.com. So it sort of looks... relatively, you know, it's a misleading, a trompe l'oeil. You know those paintings where they paint on the wall and it's not really quite right?
Oh, is it like the one where you have to, like, not focus and you see the sailing ship?
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, You know, the funny dotty things. Graham's looking
very bemused. Yeah, that's the ones I mean, the
and
funny
you,
dotty things.
And you stare into them for a while and your little six-year-old goes boo from behind the picture. Yeah, yep. Exactly. They're all a rage about 20 years ago.
Never ever worked for me.
Still got one. No, likewise. I never still got saw one hanging anything.
I really didn't. I can relax my eyes and unfocus my eyes, but I can't see anything in those.
I can always get them to work.
Can you?
Yeah.
I think you've been swizzed.
What are we talking about?
Fast flux.
We're talking about fast flux.
Oh, and fast flux.
You've taken us down a very interesting tangent.
Talking about sailing ships. Yes.
In the recent released internet thriller, put my tongue back in, Untraceable, starring Diane Lane, a criminal uses advanced technology to ensure his own macabre website remains untraceable to law enforcement agencies.
Oh.
Now, this is becoming a little bit more fact than fiction these days with this technology that these guys are using calling Fast Flux. It's one of the biggest tools being used by criminal botnets today, says Robert McArdle from the security firm Trend Micro. Now, in essence, what this is I was trying to put this into layman's terms the other day, but for those of you who are interested in the way the botnets work, they have a little bit of software put on them when you go to an unscrupulous website, and it lays dormant until the master control machine decides to actually do something because it's just sitting there waiting for instructions. Reminds me of something out of Doctor Who, really, doesn't it?
Bot short for robot,
yep.
And net short for network. So it's a network of robots. In this case, the robot is a computer program that does stuff for you in a semi-autonomous sort of way.
Yeah. So what they're doing now, because obviously law enforcement agencies want to find the actual server, the computer which has the fraudulent or the phishing site on it.
Yeah.
What these guys are actually starting to do now is load up a mirror image of their phishing site on all these botnet machines.
Yep.
And then there's a lovely thing called DNS, which anyone who's on the internet may be familiar with. It's the telephone directory that converts the, I want to go to www.paypal.com into the IP address to route that request through to the server where PayPal's on.
That's right, yep.
So what these guys are doing is they have a little application that now changes their DNS server settings every half hour or less.
Yep.
So the DNS, that phone directory which gets replicated out to all the ISPs where machines need to go to find those particular sites, is changing so frequently, it doesn't matter whether it's updated or out of date or whatever the case might happen to be, it's going to find a bot which has got the website on it, which will be served back to that particular person. And then they dump
on the other hand, if you try and trace it, if you try and find one, by the time you find a physical one, it's almost certainly no longer being used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've still collected that data, but the little program that they've put on these machines, and they're really, really lightweight. I was reading an article tonight by one of the security firms. They can put little 30K programs on a machine, which can actually be a mail server and a web thing and all that sort of stuff. So it's really, really lightweight. You would never know it was there. And that's how they're actually starting to become untraceable, as like the film says.
Yep.
So that in itself is a bit scary. Now, the domain that I got this silly email from PayPal during the course of the week.
User updates or something.
Yeah, userupdates.com. I actually did looked up who owned the domain, as you can do, and it came up to the Beijing Innovative Linkage Technology Limited.
Oh, good.
Yes. ns1.bmxon.com. So it's a Chinese registered company, obviously spamming for, they could have everything there from, NAB updates, userupdates.com. It's just that sort of trompe-l'oeil domain name that people sort of think, oh, yeah, NAB's in the URL or, PayPal's in the URL. Yeah, I'll click it and do all that sort of stuff. So anyway, I just thought I'd just trace back through and find out who it is. Hosted in the United States, allegedly. So, but who knows with the way these botnets are going these days. But the other really scary thing is the owner of this domain, allegedly the Beijing Innovative Linkage Technology Limited company, has 1,358 other domains.
Yeah.
Is that scary?
That is scary. Another thing that I've noticed that a lot of these companies have been doing recently is when you have a domain name, if you work, I guess, from the right-hand side back, you can see
this is a very good point.
Yeah, you can see the country code or the top-level domain code there. So if it's .com, then it's for a business traditionally based in the US. If it's .au, then it's something that's coming out of Australia.
And then you work back again, and then you work back again, again, again. The problem is people read from left to right.
Yeah, and but you have to interpret them in the groups, in the dot separated groups from right to left when you're reading a domain name.
Exactly.
And you've also, I mean, this is where consumers need to have a little bit of education, and it's not something that's immediately obvious to new users to the internet. You've also got to be able to teach people to identify which part of the big URL is actually the domain name, which is the bit between the first double slash and the first slash. Yeah,
this is the big problem, because you can have the machine names or server names up the front on the left hand side of the name.
Yeah,
and if you move your mouse pointer across a link and you see it says http://  www.nab.com.au, and you think, oh yeah, it's a national bank address. It's quite a valid looking address, and you click it, but after the .au it might have .server1.beijing.useraccounts.cn, and you're actually finding that when you're clicking on it, you are going to a rogue site. But because you're reading from left to right, you might see the first part of it, you think it looks legitimate.
You hope it's been truncated.
You've got to understand how those domain names are put together.
This is the problem, so be aware.
Worth learning how that all fits together.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, Graham Callaghan on the panel this evening. Lydia Davis is one of our members, and she went off to the RSA conference recently, the RSA 2008 conference, to be precise, in San Francisco, all about encryption and safety online, being secure in the online world. One of the companies that was exhibiting there was Seagate. Now, that'll be a name familiar to all of us in relation to hard drives and the likes. Seagate are doing something very impressive. They're actually building portable hard drives, the hard drive that you go and plug into your USB port on your machine, which has its own inbuilt encryption program. So when it's disconnected from the mothership, so to speak, if someone nicks it, there's no way known they're going to be able to get in and see the data that you've got on that drive.
Interesting.
Now, is that a good idea or what?
It's good, but it's dangerous.
It is. I can see goods and bads straight away.
Pros and cons. Anyway, Lyd caught up with Ben Hur-Castro, Senior Director of Product Management at Seagate, to find out all about this new technology.
This is Lydia Davis. I'm talking to Ben Hur-Castro, Senior Director of Product Management with Seagate, and we're at RSA 2008 in San Francisco. Why is Seagate and Maxtor at RSA?
Seagate developed this technology, full disk encryption, and they offer that to both server and PC OEMs. And we are offering the first external storage product that uses FDU drive called Black Armor.
Mm-hmm.
So RSA is one of the premier encryption events out there, and we want to be able to showcase our technology, the full disk encryption, as well as our Maxtor Black Armor drive.
So tell me about that a little bit more.
So Maxtor Black Armor is the first external storage device out there that uses full disk encryption. And that means, again, the whole drive is encrypted. So you can't access the drive unless you have the password. Mm-hmm. Once you have the password, then you have access to the entire drive. You know, it's 128-bit AES hardware encryption. We have government agencies testing out our product, and they've deemed it, using supercomputers, it'll take about 30 years to break.
Fantastic.
Into the Maxtor Black Armor.
Now, how would that help me? Why would I want to use one of these?
So it depends. I think everyone today, I think security is very important. You know, you see that with credit fraud, identity fraud. You see that with news reports of people leaving their laptops or some type of storage device on an airplane. And you want that encrypted.
Absolutely.
So what this allows you to do is, with a very simple encryption algorithm, allows you to protect everything that's important to you. And so whenever you go, let's say, whenever you unplug from the computer, it's automatically locked. So whenever you take it with you and you leave it behind, unless they have a password, and assuming you don't write it on a Post-it or someplace on the Black Armor, they're unable to get into it. And so what that means is, if they plug this in, it's all gibberish to them unless they have the right password.
So how, if I lose that, how am I going to get it back? Is there a way of putting in my information in there so that if someone does come across it, they can send it back to me?
No, because they would need the password to get into it.
So it's a pretty neat thing. We could actually, you could engrave your name on it, really, can you? Your phone number. What about data breaches? What are the most common data breaches at the moment?
When I think about portable devices, it's you've heard of some companies that have their customers' social security numbers, and it's unencrypted. So if it's stolen, anyone has access to all of that customer information. What this allows you to do, Black Armor, it automatically encrypts it so that if it was ever stolen, they would need the right password to get in. And we've talked about before with all the legislation going around that if you have your data on an encrypted drive and is ever stolen. You do not have to report that because it's kept on an encrypted drive. So the data was never really stolen.
This is in the United States.
Correct.
So if you don't have it encrypted, you do have to report it.
Yes.
Just in terms of Maxtor, what is the difference with Maxtor and Seagate?
So Maxtor, from its roots with the OneTouch brand, has always been about data protection. So there's consumers, there's small business owners who want data protection, who need, for example, backing mm-hmm. up their files. They want to encrypt it. They want to be able to be safe in case of theft. So the Maxtor brand is all about data protection. On the Seagate side, which speaks more to consumers, offers more lifestyle solutions. So they allow you to access the data wherever you are, allow you to share files with whoever you want. So it's two different types of offerings for the Maxtor and Seagate brands.
Yeah.
What's interesting is if you look at the life of a photo, mm-hmm. so with a simple digital camera, point and click, you take one picture,
mm-hmm.
and then that can go through several paths.
Mm-hmm.
You can back up, you can send it online,
mm-hmm.
you can enhance the photo and then send it online, you can share it. And so, for example, what the Free Agent Pro allows you to do is you can automatically put pictures on Shutterfly,
mm-hmm.
or you can automatically post pictures to an internet drive.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Seagate Free Agent allows you to share data more easily.
So this is like software built in?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So this is very new to us because we just see Seagate as the provider of hard drives. We're not used to seeing Seagate.
No, that's a good point. So Seagate is the world's largest manufacturer of hard disk drives.
That's right.
But there's a division that I'm in, the Seagate Consumer Solutions, mm-hmm. which offers solutions to both consumers and small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So by offering solutions, it's more than just a drive. It comes with all the cables you need to connect to your computer and the software you need to run.
Mm-hmm. And the software is getting much easier to use day by day.
Absolutely.
What do consumers need to think about when they're buying a product for storage or for portable storage, really?
You know, I think with portable storage, I think consumers, any consumer, small business owner, consumer, should really start looking at encryption or some type of security for their data. I showed you some stats where storage in the home is outpacing storage in business.
Yes.
And which means there's more user-generated files out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be video, that could be music, that could be finances. And I think people need to start looking at how they can keep those files secure, especially with a portable device that you bring with you and you can leave behind. You want to keep those files safe. So Black Armor is really the first offering to it that allows consumers to easily encrypt their files.
Now, you were talking about backups. That was with Seagate.
Backup is, Maxtor and Seagate both offer backup. Safety Drill is a feature that allows you to image your internal hard drive
mm-hmm.
so that if that were to ever crash or if a virus ever infected it,
mm-hmm.
you can install a new drive and restore that old image onto the new drive. And you do it in three simple steps.
Can you just give us a brief journey through encryption? What does 128-bit encryption mean, or how is all that determined?
So there's different levels of encryption technology. There's 128, 256, 512, and it's a matter of how good the encryption is. So like I told you before, the 128-bit AES encryption, when government agencies tested it out, it took 30 years to actually crack it
mm-hmm.
Using supercomputers.
So you're talking about decent encryption then?
That's pretty good encryption.
Yeah.
So you can go higher, 256, 512, but at 128-bit does the job for you today.
Thank you, Ben, very much for talking with me. Black Armor, you have to have a look at it. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
As we mentioned earlier on in the show, there's a new cloud above us. Microsoft are putting up above in the world. And it's in respects, it's competing with what Google have been doing already. What they're trying to do And it just got launched in the United States this week, and we're trying to organise an interview, which I'm going to do very shortly, with Microsoft to find out more about it. But they've basically brought the cloud concept computing, whereby all of our data and applications are stored on the internet as opposed to on the PC, a step closer to reality with the unveiling of its live mesh program. If you go to ws.mesh.com, you'll see its front page there.
So we've gone from the model that we had in the 70s and 80s, where we had dumb terminals on our desktops, we had mainframes, really intelligent applications running, and that's where all our data was stored. Then we've moved everything to the desktops over the last 20 years, and now we're moving back again.
You got it.
We're changing the model.
You got it.
Yep.
Interesting.
It's going to work? Are you going to trust having your prized belongings stored on a server owned by a multinational company?
Well, this is the thing. 20 or 30 years ago, when we just had dumb terminals on our desks, our data was stored securely in our own computer rooms, wasn't it?
Yes.
But now it's not going to be stored in our own computer rooms. It's going to be stored somewhere.
I think it's got a lot going for it from a business point of view for your contacts. Obviously, there's certain things you don't want to put on there. And I think that's what the user, once the user's educated in how it works, it'll work well. Because you won't be putting your personal this, that, and your, you know, all those photographs that you probably, well, some you might. You know, it's a great way to archive stuff. I don't know, who's going to pay the bandwidth? Who's going to pay for disk space? You know, you can hire or rent disk space out of the United States very cheaply at the moment, as I've found since our Power Web dilemmas. So it's very competitive. But I don't know, are you comfortable putting certain things online?
I don't know if I would be.
I'd share my contacts beautifully. I think that'd be fantastic. Says he who my has bookmarks. A... Gets rid of all those social networking sites in one fell swoop.
Well, I was just going to say, I've got a Facebook account with a lot of personal details online. I've got a lot of photos. I've got information about friends, who I do business with. And I don't really think of that as being a security risk if it's managed properly. But then again, would I put commercial business data online, get someone to store that for me? I don't know. I really don't know.
Anyway, it's food for thought. Just tune into Tech Talk Radio next week or two. We'll be doing a bit of an interview with Microsoft. We'll find out. We'll ask those questions. They're very good questions, Dr. Ron. Where do we put it all? All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to do Gadget, Oddspot, and Website of the Week because we're rapidly running out of time. An email in from GD. Hi, guys. Enjoying the show? That's really... I'm glad to hear that, Jeff. Where was Lyd when she recorded her segment? On a boat? No, she was in the bowels of the conference center in San Francisco. They have these little cubicles where they do interviews. It's probably about the same size of a cubicle that you're thinking of in your mind at the moment, and probably sounds a lot similar to it as well. But yes, she was in those sort of environments there. Yeah, you know, they just find these little rooms and stick people aside.
Yeah, sometimes it's not possible to do these things in a quiet recording studio, is it?
No, it's a lovely thing. And then they have these lanyard things that sound like bangles. I said, amputate those bangles next time you have those next to the microphone, Lydia. By the way, happy birthday, Martin, from last week, in case we forgot.
Yes.
Oh, dear. All right, yes, back with more after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening. You're listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
You're listening.
In terms of the volume,
I understand. To give fingerprints. Now, this.
We may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers
per
second
was good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing like
that. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own!
And what a gadget we have for you this week, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you doing house renovations, thinking to upgrade the jacuzzi in the backyard, maybe.
Oh, no. What have you found?
I have found the Kohler Fountainhead Vibra Acoustic Bathtub.
What?
This is just what the whole family needs. You know, after the hard day with the kids,
You know, sitting back, I think I'll just jump into the bath and do a relax. The Kohler Fountain Vibra Acoustic Bathtub adds a whole new dimension to your bathtub, throwing in sound vibrations, chromotherapy, and music to enrich your soaking experience. After all, research has proven that sound vibration, music, and chromotherapy works wonders when it comes to relieving one of the stresses whilst keeping the mind at ease. I'm reading, can you tell? The only thing missing is a complimentary rubber ducky to keep you company during those relaxing baths. The Kohler Fountain Vibra Acoustic Bathtub, apart from being a mouthful, has no price tag on it yet because they just haven't come up with a price yet, or no one else has been silly enough to actually inquire to buy one yet. And that is...
Graham's without speech.
I'm absolutely stunned, I'm sorry.
That is the Tech Talk Radio... what are we doing? I've lost track.
It might be the odd spot.
No, it's a gadget.
Yes. Gadget of the week. All right.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
TechSupportAlert.com. This is a great technical resource. It's got how-to guides, free utilities, reviews, and downloadable PDFs. Some of the resources there include how to surf safely, how to make Firefox load faster, how to reorganize the Windows Start menu, the three most underutilized keyboard shortcuts, how to dual boot, and a list of the best 46 freeware utilities.
Yeah, where? Do tell,
the
where?
The address is www.techsupportalert.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness. Showtime.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Always one interested in the development of the English language.
Oh yes, Dr. Ron Smith.
Calls are being made for Geek Speak to be recognised as an official language after new research by Pixmania, one of Europe's largest online retailers, revealed Nerdic had become the fastest growing language in Europe.
Nerdic. Mm. Is it like
you Nordic? Are elite hacksaw.
You are elite hacksaw. It's right. STFU, I am elite hacksaw. About 100 new words are added to Nerdic every year, with recent additions including Mashup, Rickroll, and WiMAX.
Yeah, good.
Of course, it's not really a language. Nerdic refers to the buzzwords and acronyms that describe technological techniques or advances that are becoming integrated into everyday conversation. Do you know what Rickrolling is?
Not a clue.
I had to research this one, didn't I?
Rickrolling.
Rickrolling is the practice of tricking someone into watching the video of Rick Astley's late 80s hit song, Never Gonna Give You Up, by posting a misleading link. So if you click on a misleading link and Rick Astley starts singing to you, you've been Rickrolled.
I think I've had enough misleading links in my time. I don't need that one.
The Tech Talk Radio Odd Spot of the week.
Fantastic. Next week, we're going to be talking all about backing up your data, because that's what we need to do. Adam Turner's fallen foul of it on numerous occasions, as testament in his view from the couches of recent times. So make sure you tune in as we speak to someone who knows all about data. But watch the website, the forum, the newsletters, all those regular things. It's been fantastic. The relief is here, so it's time for us to depart.
Thanks, Andrew. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been wonderful. Thank you, Graham, for coming in this evening. It and has been, please been just good, try good not night. To leave it to the last minute till next time when you walk in the door.
Oh, see what I can
to
go do.
To That'd be good. All right, it's been fantastic. Until next time, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio around Australia on the pod and all over the world. Feedback at Tech Talk Radio. Send us your emails. It'll be good. Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panelists, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.